This is Twit.
So Google announced today that it's making some changes to how its service tackles, you know, things like fake news and offensive search content, among other things. Joining us to discuss Project Owl is Danny Sullivan from Search Engine Land. How's it going, Danny?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's great to get you back. So first of all, Project Owl is, you say, a three-pronged approach. Tell us a little bit about what Google is launching exactly today.
Sure. Well, they've taken notice of the complaints about fake news, these bizarre featured snippets that can sometimes come up and tell you that President Obama's planning a coup or that women are evil, suggested searches that can send people into these bizarre and strange worlds and sometimes simply be offensive in and of themselves. And, you know, it's been a real PR nightmare for them, not to mention just a search quality issue, period. So this whole thing that they dubbed Project Owl has been their internal effort to come up with a way of improving things. And there may be other things that come down the line, but the stuff that they announced today, as you said, are three prongs. One of the things is that when you do a search and Google starts to give you those suggestions that come up, what Google calls autocomplete, you're going to get a new form if you want to, where you can report whether or not something seemed to be harmful or offensive or sexual in nature, and just give them more feedback about that so they can use it to refine the results and come up with an algorithmic way they hope to get rid of offensive stuff and make these things more useful. The other feedback form they have is for featured snippets, so that if you get one of these strange answers that comes up and you're going, whoa, what is happening here? You have an easier way to report to Google that something's seriously wrong with this, with a lot of the same kind of options, whether something is potentially offensive or harmful or simply inaccurate. And then the biggest thing is really that they're hoping to increase the quality of their search results. And they're going to give more weight to authoritative content, so that if you find yourself doing a search and for some reason it's in one of these odd areas, did the Holocaust really happen, that it seems like they're going to be less sensitive to giving you pages that actually seem to answer that question, even though they might not be right, and more answers from pages that are authoritative in nature, even if they're not directly addressing the question.
So those predictions, autocomplete, I guess, is what I always thought of them. Was someone gaming those, or were those actually things that people were searching for? And then if they change them, isn't it sort of changing the idea of a prediction? I mean, if people are actually searching for that, do you think it's okay for Google to be changing it?
They are indeed real searches that people actually conduct, and people do searches because they have misconceptions that they actually believe, or they've heard about misconceptions and they actually, you know, or questions, and they want to get answers to those sorts of things. In a very small situations, it could be that people are gaming them. But for the most part, this is just really natural searches that people are doing, and they can be an unfortunate reflection on our society, but that's what Google's showing. And that's one of the reasons they've struggled with them, for exactly what you ask. Well, if we get rid of these suggestions, aren't we censoring what people are actually looking for? But the purpose of autocomplete wasn't to kind of open your mind to completely unusual things that might take you off the beaten track. The idea was it was supposed to speed up your searches, so that if you were typing in, you know, WEA, it would say, well, you probably want weather, so we'll help you get to that. It probably wasn't that, oh, you typed in WEA, we think you're looking for weather, why Republicans hate Democrats, you know, I'm this top of my head type of thing. But The idea is that they're really not trying to reinforce stereotypes or offend people with these sorts of things. It's getting back to what they were supposed to be, which is getting you to popular and common kinds of searches that save you time in conducting your searches. Now, if you want to do some of these searches, you aren't prevented from doing it. It's just that they're not kind of helping you along in doing that. You can go ahead and continue typing this stuff, and you're perhaps not getting detoured into areas or having conceptions created by stuff just because other people have questions. You do these searches, and then you see something, you go, oh, I didn't know that was true, and it might not be true. It's just that people are questioning it, and then it can cause you to have these kinds of misconceptions yourself before you've even done any research.
Yeah, you know, in reading your piece, like, I didn't realize, like, you've written a lot about this sort of stuff, especially in the last few months, but I didn't really realize how influential our queries are when we open up a search box within Google for instructing Google search product how it returns results to us. I just kind of always figured the algorithm is based on the, you know, the sites that it's trawling through and you know, rating based on visits. I never really considered the fact that just our action of going in there and searching for certain things, and if there's a lot of people going in there and searching for that same certain thing, whether it be true or not, actually influences the results that you might get. So yeah, this really seems like a big change to how Google's search product works. I imagine Google was aware of the potential for abuse, if you want to call it that, for a long time before all of this fake news stuff started happening late last year. Is there any reason why Google didn't try and tackle this sooner?
You know, because they really didn't see it as that big of a problem. These issues, they really do go back for years. You can pick it an example, and you can find unusual featured snippets that, you know, we had written about in like 2014, and Google really didn't do anything, or auto suggestions that go back to like 2011, and people are like, why are you doing this sort of thing? What's really changed is that they kind of viewed these as, well, we know there's issues, but there's such a small amount. In fact, they even put a percentage to it today and said that this is like a quarter of 1% of all the searches that they process. And so when they looked at the scale of other things that they're trying to address, there were bigger issues that they thought were higher on the agenda, you know, stuff like outright spam that pollutes popular queries that lots and lots of people are doing, or low quality content that again can impact really popular queries. And I think it's been an eye opener, and they described it, you know, when I was talking to them, as being shell shocked when they've had this spate of articles that have come out over the past few months that have really highlighted this. Because, you know, we can look at these things and you say, this is crazy, and to, you know, I think outside observers, it doesn't necessarily matter to them whether this is a small percentage or not of Google's overall searches. It just seems wrong. It is wrong. And, you know, people want it fixed. And it looks like Google doesn't care, or they're not in control of their search engine. And that ultimately is both a bad thing from a search quality perspective in doing their job, as well as just a terrible PR nightmare.
Mm-hmm. I like how you call it, you call them problematic searches, which is good. Because, I mean, everyone who searches for did the Holocaust really happen isn't necessarily a Holocaust denier, or, you know, a racist or an anti-Semite. They might actually be looking for, you know, to do a scholarly piece about, you know, Holocaust deniers or something like that. So, you know, it's good. It's like, it's not good, it's bad. They're problematic. And in what way do you think that the Google Home has really exacerbated this problem for Google?
Well, that's been another thing I think that's kind of accelerated their realization they have to do something. With Google Home, you know, you ask it a question and it comes back with an answer. And most of the time, it's amazing. I always go back to this one case where I'm at my refrigerator and I have it open and I see some grapes and I can hear my guinea pig squeaking. So I'm like, hey, can guinea pigs eat grapes? And it's like, yes, guinea pigs can eat grapes. Just make sure they're the seedless variety. And it's awesome, right? Because it's found this answer on the web. But when you then do something to, like, say, oh, yeah, are women evil? And it comes back and it says, women all have a little bit of evil. Women all are a little bit of a prostitute. You're like, what are you talking about?
Every woman has a little evil in her. Women all love men.
Okay, Google Home, go away. I don't want to hear any more of it.
And that just, it's just a terrible illustration when Google is literally speaking these yeah, horrible things. You know, it's putting voice to this stuff. And so, you know, when you have this new device you hope is going to be in everyone's homes, it's just even more of a terrible perception problem as well as a search issue.
Yeah, and they've, you know, obviously this is part of the changes to featured snippets, which, you know, appears in Assistant, appears in Search, but it also, as you say, appears in Google Home. And there's a way to report that, at least in the browser, the handheld device. Is there a way to tell your Google Home when they give you one that's problematic? Report that, because that's really bad. Is there any way to do that?
There is. I just don't know how to make it work yet. They told me, I literally have an email. Let me see if they tell me. oh, I don't even see the answer yet. So when I talked with them last week, they said, hey, by the way, there's a way you can even give feedback through Google Home. You can't fill out a giant form, but you can inform us if there's something wrong. And then I was trying it today, and I couldn't figure out how to make that happen in any intuitive way to me. So I've emailed them and said, can you tell me how? And I'll update my article with Excellent. Those instructions when I get them.
Yeah, I'm very curious on that one. So you conclude that the changes in your kind of playing around with the search engine after this news improved search results for the query, did the Holocaust happen, but that Bing's results are still very bad. Do you envision competing search engines kind of following suit down this path, really working to improve their search product in the same ways or similar ways that Google's doing right now?
I think so. Bing has largely escaped this attention, in part, first of all, because, you know, when it was first coming out, I think their results typically were better in some of the examples that would come up. They still had issues, and you could find these kinds of issues, but Bing would tend to put the authoritative site first, so that if you were asking a question about the Holocaust, you were getting, say, a Wikipedia page, not, you know, a page from a white supremacist site. So, you know, I think Google's flipped that around, so Bing doesn't have, so it doesn't have this your first result is terrible so often problem. I can't say that conclusively, by the way, because there's just so many searches you can do and you can find exceptions to everything.
Sure.
But I certainly think that Bing will feel the pressure of, well, we don't want to have these kinds of issues as well. But, you know, Bing kind of escapes it because nobody bothers really to check or compare them. It's Google that people really focus on the most.
Yeah, absolutely. So Google's in, I would say, a very unique position when it comes to companies the size that Google is. Its core product doesn't only, you know, make its, you know, they're not just striving to make their product better, but they are realizing that they actually influence millions upon millions of people based on how their product operates and what people see when they type in a couple letters and it comes back with something they didn't intend. But, you know, maybe that opens their eyes to a new thought, and that can change, you know, the world in certain ways, good or bad. How unique is this scenario, do you think, for companies the size of Google, that they have this much influence over how people react based on some, you know, feedback like this?
I don't think there's a whole lot of comparisons. The other big example that comes to mind, obviously, is Facebook, which has been dealing with this problem in their own way. With, you know, the difference is with Facebook, you have a case where you can have fake news or problematic content go viral and spread very rapidly and be reinforced because people tend to be in their own bubbles. So, you know, they've got challenges on how do we sort of stop this virality and how do we kind of fact check people so that they get that information as they kind of stumble upon it. It's different with Google, where these kinds of things don't go viral. It's just that you have people who maybe been doing searches and are diligent or whatever, trying to understand what's happening. And, you know, they've got that research component. You want to make sure you have the right research when they actually go looking. I try to struggle to think of other companies that are like that. You can potentially see maybe an Amazon in terms of some of the reviews that they get, that I don't know if we have much of a fake news issue, but certainly we can get fake reviews that happen, you know, yes, over there. And you also have politically motivated stuff that goes on. And, you know, I think Twitter may have to deal with it to some degree as well. But anytime I think you have something where there's a mass audience, you have a potential for these kinds of issues to come up.
Well, why do you think Amazon doesn't have this similar problem with the Amazon Echo? I mean, I was, when you were talking about how to correct an answer to the Google Home, like I was just looking at my Amazon Echo app and, you know, it said, did it ask what you wanted? Did it do what you wanted? And you can report, you know, something. So, I mean, why? I don't actually even know where their search results come from.
Amazon doesn't have the problem because Echo is actually not as smart as Google Home or not as ambitious. So, you know, Echo, and I have both the devices, and I love them both for different things. And I love the Echo because when I ask it for information about things that are very delineated or fact-checked, it'll know, like, what's the weather, what's the stocks, giving my headlines. You know, this is stuff where, you know, they're kind of carefully constructed data sources that are going into it. And so they have a lot of trust there. But the downside is if I tried to ask it that question about, like, what my guinea pig can eat, and I've done this, it doesn't know. It doesn't know why the sky is blue. It doesn't know. It just doesn't know so many things because it just doesn't have the data to back into it. Whereas Google Home is tapping into the entire web. And so its advantage over the Echo is if you want a device that you can ask all sorts of questions to and get answers, it's much more capable of doing that. But that comes with the downside of, you know, a much greater chance that it's going to make a mistake because, you know, there's no sort of human vetting of all the stuff that goes in. In the end, it's really a computer making its best guess.